Hello there, and welcome to episode number 140 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get chipped today. Alright, so we are officially 3 weeks until opening day, which is kind of crazy because it is earlier than usual this year with opening day falling on March 28th. Typically, it tends to occur in early April, but you know, again, too, we're still kind of getting used to having a regular set date or set span for opening day, too, just because, you know, you think back to 2020 and the time since then, there's been a lot that's happened in the world, right? Between the shortened season of that 2020 year, the COVID-19 restrictions that were in place in 2021, the fact that there was a lockout in 2022. So, you know, with Major League Baseball kicking things off in South Korea this year, they had to start the regular season a bit earlier. And I think it probably feels, you know, earlier than normal is because things have just been completely out of whack the last number of years. We're still getting used to having, you know, everything be more or less normal, right? To kick things off at the start of a new baseball season. But it is exciting that we're only 3 weeks away from meaningful baseball again. And it is a notable date for the Toronto Blue Jays because currently they're a little beat up. Now, there's nothing significant, at least as of yet. You know, we don't have any declarations of players starting the year on the injured list, unlike we've seen from other teams around the league so far this spring, namely, say, the Boston Red Sox, who likely will be without their biggest free agent addition of the offseason, that being Lucas Giolito, who may miss the entire 2024 season. So, you know, when you consider how things are going across the division in Boston, the Blue Jays, despite their injury concerns at the moment, are more or less off to a decent start in that regard for a team that was by far one of, if not the healthiest teams in all of baseball last season, particularly on the pitching side. So let's start with the rundown here and recap everyone just in case any of you missed the injury updates or what's going on with the pitching staff, anything like that. So we'll start from the top here. We'll start with the most notable ailments right now. And obviously that has to start with Alek Manoah and Kevin Gausman. Both are dealing with some sort of shoulder thing. Manoah's is being described as shoulder soreness, where Kevin Gausman's is being described as shoulder fatigue. Now, obviously, it's still spring training. These injuries are far less concerning now versus how concerning they would be if they were to happen during the regular season. Manoah played catch on Monday. Reports said he felt really good. He was supposed to play catch again on Tuesday. We didn't get any sort of update regarding his status after that. But he was supposed to pitch last Sunday when the Blue Jays visited the Red Sox spring training facility. But he got scratched from that start because he didn't respond the way he was hoping to coming out of his first start of the spring and subsequent bullpen session. And so that to me by far is the most concerning one. It's far more concerning than Gausman suffering from some shoulder fatigue. You know, like he also played catch Tuesday. He was supposed to play catch again on Wednesday during the Blue Jays off day. So I assume we'll receive some kind of update here regarding his status on Thursday. But again, with Gausman, even though he hasn't pitched in any exhibition games so far this spring, I'm not all that concerned about his status, just because, like, especially when you compare Gausman to Manoa, Gausman can afford to have a shorter runway to the regular season. Obviously, it's not ideal, especially when he's your ace and you're relying so heavily on him. But when it's just shoulder fatigue, you hope that this can nip this in the bud now rather than having it drag into the regular season. So as long as Gausman is able to get back on the mound this week at some point, and get his buildup resuming, he should be fine. He should be fully on track to be ready for opening day. Manoa, on the other hand, that one's a bit more concerning because, you know, it is soreness rather than fatigue. Fatigue is something you can hopefully rectify with just additional recovery time. And obviously, the Blue Jays are hoping the same thing happens with Manoa's shoulder soreness. But the thing that's more concerning with Manoa here is the fact that he can't afford to miss more starts than he already has, right? Because unlike Gausman, Manoa's competing for a spot on this roster. And if he's not able to build himself up enough as a starter, he's not going to be ready for opening day in 3 weeks, right? Like, that, it's fun that meaningful baseball is only 3 weeks away, but that only gives Manoa 3 weeks to basically start from scratch again and build himself up, because in his first spring training start, he didn't even pitch 2 innings. Now, that was because he threw almost 40 pitches and was completely and utterly ineffective. But he needs to be able to use every day of these next 3 weeks to prepare himself for the regular season. And it's currently constructed with each passing day. Like, the more I think about this situation, the more it seems to me like we're headed in a situation. Now, this could change, but it seems like where things are at right now, there's a really good chance that Manoa could start the year on the injured list, which would be a terrible start to the year for somebody who needs to bounce back and needs to show that 2023 was an outlier and not the beginning of something far worse. So I'm going to get into Manoa's disastrous start a little bit later here after I get into or finish wrapping up all the injury updates here that we have. But yeah, that's certainly concerning. Now, beyond Gausman and Manoa, there are a few other minor, I don't even want to call them injuries, but like ailments or issues that have transpired in Blue Jays camp recently. One of them, of course, is that Danny Jansen's dealing with some sort of bug. He was supposed to play on Tuesday, but had to be sent home after showing signs of a fever. After showing a fever, not signs of it. But obviously, that's not concerning whatsoever. As soon as he gets healthy, he should be ready to go. And sticking on the pitching side here, getting back to the pitching side, Yariel Rodriguez threw a side session on Monday. He's scheduled to throw live batting practice on Friday, which is notable because he's been dealing with back spasms early on this camp. And he was late to reporting to spring training too because of the whole visa situation coming over from Cuba. So he definitely is behind the eight ball here, trying to get built up. And, you know, where things stand with him, I'd be a little surprised if he didn't start the year in AAA, especially because the Blue Jays are stretching him out as a starter. They want to see how viable that option is with Rodriguez, because The Blue Jays can only option him without his consent in 2024. So this is the year that if you need to develop him in the minors, now's the time to do it. And with the slow start this spring, it makes all the sense in the world that Rodriguez is going to start the year in AAA, get his feet underneath him, try to develop another pitch so that maybe he can be more than a reliever, even though he'd be really, really good in that role. Friday should be interesting to see where he's at. Probably looking to throw 20 to 30 pitches, something like that. And then we'll see where that goes. I mean, he probably, after that live BP session, if everything goes well, he may throw another session. He may throw a simulated game. But hopefully he can get into some spring training games before too long here. Especially because from an outsider's perspective, somebody not inside the organization, you want some actual concrete data to look at with Rodriguez, especially on that wipeout slider of his. I want to, you know, check out the spin rate and the horizontal movement on it and stuff. So I'm excited to see what all of that looks like once he does make his Grapefruit League debut. But it's just great to see that he's making progress. And Cabin Biggio is another guy who hasn't been able to get into spring training games yet. That's because he as well is dealing with some sort of shoulder issue. The Blue Jays have been playing that very cautiously so far, but he did participate in that simulated game over the weekend where Ricky Tiedemann and Yusei Kikuchi were both throwing in. And speaking of Tiedemann, everything, all the reports that came out of that were all positive. Apparently Tiedemann's velocity, his stuff, they all looked fantastic. So it sounds like he could get into exhibition games either this weekend or early next week, as long as everything's fine with his recovery and nothing flares up. So that's really encouraging to see. And by the sounds of it, it doesn't seem like Cabin Biggio is all that far away from playing in games either, which obviously, with the Blue Jays' current situation in the infield, it'd be nice to get Biggio up to speed and ready for opening day. But that's sort of where things lie on the injuries front for the Blue Jays here. And like I said, the most concerning thing right now is Alek Manoah. Largely because, again, he's their biggest X factor. And so the Blue Jays need to get him built up. But to do that, he has to be healthy, right? So we'll see what the update is on Thursday, if we get one, regarding Manoah. But he certainly didn't get off to an encouraging start in his first spring training game against the Detroit Tigers, where, like I said previously, he didn't even go two innings. He went an inning and two-third, allowed three hits, four earned runs. He hit three batters, walked another, didn't record a strikeout, and he got lit up too. Three hard hit balls, producing exit velocities over 95 miles per hour. The only positive takeaway from that start was the velocity was up for Manoah. His four-seamer averaged 93.7 miles per hour. That was up from his 2023 average of 92.8. That four-seamer maxed out at 95.5 miles per hour. The velocity was up on his two-seamer as well. It was up on his slider even. And he saw a bit of a bump in his slider spin rate as well. But one of the things we didn't see from Manoah was that horizontal break on that slider. It's still, you know, it was better than where it was a lot of the time in 2023, but it averaged 12 inches of horizontal break, which was an inch fewer than 2023, and ideally you want that averaging in the 14 or 15 inch range. So there's still some work to do there from Manoah, but stuff wise it wasn't terrible. He just had a lot of arm side run on his pitches and evidently beamed three different batters. So, but you also have to remember too that Manoah last pitched in an actual game prior to his spring training debut in August of last year, right? So it had been a while since Manoah had his had the adrenaline pumping in a live game setting, right? So that could have played a factor. Obviously, if his shoulder was hurting him or barking at him a little, that could have played a factor too. There are a lot of variables here. And until we see Manoah back on the mound, all we can do is draw conclusions from that start that we saw from him against the Tigers. And it's crucial that Manoah get healthy as soon as possible, because he's got some competition for that number five spot in the Blue Jays rotation. And right now, if Manoah were to start the year on the injured list, Bowden Francis would be your number five starter as currently constituted right now. Which, I'm not going to lie, I would be fond of that. Because Bowden Francis has had a really good spring so far. He's only made two appearances, so, like, it's a small sample size, mind you. But early on, like, he's picked up exactly where he left off in 2023, where he really impressed out of the bullpen for the Blue Jays. And right now they're stretching him out as a starter, which they need to do, because obviously you have uncertainty regarding Manoah and Rodriguez as well. And Francis, over those two appearances that he's made, has struck out five over four and a third innings. Only allowed two earned runs on four hits and a walk. And the stuff has looked good. The curveball is nasty from Francis. The velocity is where, on the fastball, is where it was in 2023. He's also tinkering with a splitter right now, which would serve as another out pitch for him, especially against left-handed batters. And right now for the Blue Jays, they're really looking to see how Francis can fare when he gets through the lineup a second time and even a third time. Because obviously, like, that's a big test for him. That's the biggest test for Francis this spring, is not only how do the results play out when he's a second time through the order, or even a third time through the order if he gets the chance to do so. What does his stuff look like? Does the velocity hold up when he gets to the third and the fourth inning? You know, is the slider and the curveball as sharp and crisp as they were in the first two innings? Those are the questions that Francis needs to answer here over these next 3 weeks. And Thursday is going to be a really big test for him, because he's scheduled to throw four innings for the Blue Jays in their evening contest against the Detroit Tigers, which will be under the lights. So it's, you know, it'll be a prime, well, maybe not prime time viewing, but as close to prime time viewing as you can get in spring training. So he'll certainly have a lot of eyes on him, even though the game won't be in Dunedin. It'll be at the Tigers facility, But it'll be really, really exciting to see what comes out of that game. Francis will be followed by Chad Dallas, so that's another intriguing arm to have a look at. Dallas isn't somebody that, you know, for right now in competition for a rotation spot, but he's certainly someone that we'll probably see later on in the season. Assuming the Blue Jays need more than six traditional starters this season, which, seems highly likely considering injuries are just a part of baseball, especially on the pitching front. But yeah, like I've been incredibly encouraged from what I've seen from Bowden Francis so far, and we'll see what happens on Thursday. But again, if Manoah isn't ready to go by March 28th, if Francis stays healthy and continues to perform like the way he has so far, he's going to be not only on the opening day roster, but he's going to be slotted in that fifth starters role. So certainly an encouraging camp from him so far. And speaking of new pitches, I said that Bowden Francis is experimenting with a splitter. There are a few pitchers in camp right now who are hoping to add a splitter, which by all accounts is supposed to be the pitch of 2024. Like, if a pitcher anywhere in baseball is trying to add a new weapon to his arsenal, it's a splitter, more often than not, so far. And so along with Bowden Francis, Trevor Richards is apparently trying to add a splitter to his arsenal. Nate Pearson as well. Nate Pearson, so far at least, the splitter has looked really encouraging. It's got a lot of horizontal movement on it. So if he can command that and as well with his other pitches, I mean, that's a big if, obviously. But from what I've seen from the splitter so far, like the last time he was out, he snapped one off that was just silly. I think it had like 15 or 16 inches of horizontal break, which for a splitter is just largely unheard of, because it's supposed to, you know, traditionally break vertically rather than horizontally. So to have that type of movement on a splitter is just, it was fun. So we'll see where that goes. But Jose Berríos, he's not tinkering with a splitter, but he's actually added a cutter to his arsenal. And, you know, obviously he already has the four pitch mix, the four seamer, the two seamer, the slurve, and the changeup. But the cutter is notable because hopefully it'll be a weapon he can use versus left-handed batters. Righties he has no issues with and had no issues with in 2023. But left-handers, on the other hand, they proved a little troublesome for Berríos at times. Now, for context, Berríos made an adjustment from 2022, reduced the usage of his four-seamer, threw more slurves and changeups against lefties, two-seamers too, actually a lot more two-seamers. His two-seamers usage jumped from 14% in 2022 to 20.9% in 2023, while his four-seamer usage dropped from 29.8%, which was it was 32.6% in 2022, which by far was the highest amongst all of his pitches versus left-handers. That percentage dropped to 26.8%. It's a big drop-off, right? And he needed to, because in 2022, left-handers posted a 378 average, a 757 slugging percentage against his four-seamer. So he needed to throw more moving pitches rather than just straight velocity. And for the most part, he was successful in that approach. Hitters, they did okay against Berríos' slurve. They hit 255 against it with a 418 slug, But I still think he needs to throw more or needs to throw fewer four seamers and would benefit from doing so, because in 2023, left-handers posted a 507 slugging percentage against that four seamer and a 542 expected slugging. So they even got a bit unlucky against it. And on top of that, they recorded a 53.6% hard hit rate against that four-seamer, right? They were doing a lot of damage against it. So I do think, especially considering his four-seamer was his second most used pitch against lefties, he needs to adjust from that a little bit more, and that's what the cutter should help him do. And it may also make his other weapons against lefties more effective as well. Because, you know, I know for a large part of 2023, the changeup was a difference maker for Berríos. But left-handers still did fairly well against it. They swung and missed on it a lot at a 30.5% clip. But they also hit 313 against it with a 500 slugging percentage. And Berríos' changeup was his third most used pitch against left-handers. So I think one of the goals for Berríos in 2024 is to work in that cutter a little bit more, front hip it against lefties, similar to how he utilizes his two-seamer. But then also backdoor that cutter against lefties too. And command is something he's still working on this spring with that cutter. There have been a few times where he's missed over the plate. Hasn't been in dangerous locations. It's largely been above the zone. But he still needs to hone in the command of that pitch so that when he's, you know, saying a two-strike count and he just attacked a lefty inside with either a two-seamer or a slurve, and he wants to attack the outer half of the plate, instead of just only being able to either use his four-seamer up and away or his changeup low and away, he can try and backdoor his cutter in either of those locations and hopefully either get a hitter late or freeze them completely. So that's something that he's looking to add to his arsenal this spring, and the Blue Jays have advised him to do so largely because of how lefties fared against him in 2023, which is kind of crazy because, like, you know, we look back and see how good Berríos' 2023 season, and to think that, like, he could be even better from that. He could be even better from the 365 ERA and the 451 expected ERA, which, you know, there's certainly room to improve there. But, you know, watching him last season, to think that there's an even better version of him in there, that's fun to envision and imagine about. So we'll see where things go. It's not going to happen overnight, right? It's going to take some time to hone and feel comfortable with, because it's such a new pitch for Berríos. But again, there's a lot of potential there for it to be an effective weapon for him against lefties. I doubt we would see it against right-handed batters. Maybe he mixes it in here and there, but largely that pitch is designed to help him get lefties out more consistently. We discussed Kikuchi, or no, we didn't, because Kikuchi's not working with a splitter. So, you say Kikuchi. He hasn't added a new pitch to his repertoire. However, he's changed the grip on his changeup. And for people who aren't pitching nerds or baseball nerds, probably saying, okay, like, who cares? Change the grip. Pitchers tinker all the time. Yes. However, the early results from that new grip are very encouraging from Kikuchi. So, changeup historically for Kikuchi, because he's had one. It just, it hasn't been all that effective. Last season, he barely used it because it was just, it was a meh weapon. It was an afterthought, right? He just largely threw his four-seamer, his slider slash cutter hybrid, and his curveball, which once he added that curveball to his arsenal, he took off, right? Because then he had three different weapons that he could change speeds with. His four-seamer averages in the mid-90s, maxes out at 97, 98 miles per hour. That slider slash cutter, high 80s, low 90s, sweeping action to it. And then he's got the mid-80s curveball. And his changeup last year averaged a similar velocity to his slider slash cutter. So it kind of blended together, so to speak. And that's part of the, that was part of the issue for Kikuchi. It just, it didn't have enough separation, but that's changed so far this spring. Right now, it's averaging in the mid 80s. In his first start of the spring, it averaged 84.6 miles per hour. That was 4 miles per hour on average slower than 2023. And not only that, it had less spin on it, which is what you want for a changeup or even a splitter. As a result, it averaged more vertical break, and because of the new spike grip that he has, he added more horizontal break to the changeup as well, where it's now averaging 13 inches of horizontal movement versus the 9 inches it averaged in 2023. So, if this is a pitch that he can locate consistently and have the stuff on it continue to be where it is right now, that could be a fourth weapon for him to change speeds with. Right? Now he has the four-seamer, the slider slash cutter, the mid-80s curveball, and then he has a mid-80s changeup. That's a little bit faster than his curveball. Just a little. And it, obviously, it looks much differently than his curveball. So, tunneling-wise, if Kikuchi can mirror his release points similar, or can mirror his release points with his changeup similar to his fastball and his slider slash cutter, hitters are going to be way out in front on his changeup, or at least that's the goal, right? That would be the goal, to be able to tunnel his changeup off his four-seamer and his slider slash cutter. You know, like I lost it here, and I'd have to go looking for it again. But Pitching Ninja did a tunneling video from Kikuchi's start a few weeks ago, or last week, I believe. And showed how lethal it can be when he tunnels his changeup off those pitches, where it just looks exactly the same, and then it nosedives. But then again, what you don't see in the video is the speed difference too, where it'll take longer for the changeup to come to the plate, and it's just, it'll fool hitters completely, and it did in his game, where, I mean, it only had the one swing and miss on the two swings, but over a longer outing, you would assume that Kikuchi would be able to rack up more swings and misses off of that pitch. So that's certainly fun to see. The cutter addition for Berríos and the new changeup grip for Kikuchi are really promising developments early on. Again, it's just spring training. You got to take the results with a bit of a grain of salt. But when you look at process over results, it's hard not to get excited about the potential that those two pitches could have for Berríos and Kikuchi this season. And it's a big year for Kikuchi, right? He's in a walk year. So if he can either replicate what he did last year or build upon it. Could be a really, really another strong season from Kikuchi, and with the current injuries, let's say, in the Blue Jays rotation, having a Yusei Kikuchi that's close to 2023, if not a step above, that'd be a huge benefit for the Blue Jays, especially because a lot of the, maybe not a lot, but most models have this rotation regressing a little bit to the mean. So whatever or how much they can combat that will be significant, because we don't really know a whole lot what this offense is going to look like. And speaking of the offense, let's talk a little bit about roster battles here. You know, we outline the roster battles a little bit on the pitching side. There's there are fewer ones up for grabs there because, well, guys are injured and not built up. So until that changes, it's kind of determined already, right? If Manoah starts the year on the IL, Bowden Francis is your fifth starter. Mitch White starts the year in the bullpen as a multi-inning reliever. Things probably change throughout the year, but that's likely how things would start to begin the season. But on the offensive side, it's a little bit more fluid. Like, obviously, the Blue Jays don't have many roster battles in camp, period. But there is still uncertainty regarding the infield and a bit of the outfield, too. Like I've been saying, how long I've been saying this? For a month now, maybe even longer, that the Blue Jays still could use another outfield addition, preferably one who hits on the right side of the plate and crushes lefties, you know, like one of the three guys who fit that profile that are still available in free agency as we speak, that being Tommy Pham, Adam Duvall, and Robbie Grossman. Any of those three would do just fine on this Blue Jays roster. But until that happens, we have to go off of what's there right now. And that is that right now, if the Blue Jays weren't to add another outfielder to this team, when a lefty is on the mound and one of Varshore, Kiermaier starts on the bench, it's either going to be Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or David Schneider in left field, filling that role that Whit Merrifield served in last season. And on the infield, it's a little jumbled up with Matt Chapman, and I'm almost 40 minutes into this episode and I just brought up Matt Chapman's name. So that speaks volumes about how many topics there are to cover right now in Blue Jays camp. But yeah, if you missed it, Matt Chapman went to the San Francisco Giants on a contract that, if there was interest in Chapman coming back to the Blue Jays, they absolutely should have signed him to that type of deal or something similar, where it was $54 million over 3 years. Which includes two opt-outs, but we don't know. We don't know what went on, what Chapman's intentions are / were, whether or not the Blue Jays had already moved on, which it kind of seemed like with Kiner-Falefa and Justin Turner, both on the roster, both players we expect to play third base this season. IKF is far better suited for a super utility role, but You can't, it'd be tougher to use him in that spot if you're committing a starting or an everyday role to Matt Chapman at third base. You know, like, sure, if he got injured, you have a viable backup already on the roster, but for the most part, if Chapman was brought back, Kiner Falefa is platooning from second to left field, and sure, you could do that. It just wouldn't be the most ideal roster construction, because, you know, even though I'm confident IKF will be able to surprise a lot of Blue Jays fans this season, both offensively and defensively, having him in the lineup regularly may or may not work out all that well offensively, just because he does a lot of his damage versus four-seamers and curveballs. But when you face a pitcher that throws a lot of cutters or sinkers or sliders, changeups, it's probably not going to do all that well. So we'll see. Defensively, I have no doubt in my mind that IKF is going to perform well at third base. You know, like, Gold Glove aside, that he won in 2020, his range is undeniable. His arm strength is about average. Certainly can't throw missiles across the diamond the way that Matt Chapman can, but IKF certainly hasn't lost a step regarding his range at the hot corner or in the field, period, because he's a really good athlete regardless of where he's positioned. But yeah, seeing Matt Chapman sign for that type of deal certainly makes you wonder from the Blue Jays' perspective. But again, like, Matt Chapman has a lot of ties to the Giants organization. Bob Melvin, his former manager with the Oakland Athletics. Matt Chapman's a California guy. His offseason home is in Arizona, where the Giants play spring training. So even if the Blue Jays were willing to match that type of offer, those aspects could have been the deciding factors in Chapman's decision. We just don't know. We'll probably never know. Regardless, the Blue Jays have a lot of infield options in-house anyway. Probably too many, for my liking at least. Especially when you look at their outfield dilemma. But right now, IKF's on the roster. Your quote-unquote starting third baseman, Cabin Biggio, when he's healthy, which shouldn't be long from now, is also guaranteed pretty much a roster spot. And then you look on the bench, and that's where the roster battles currently lie here. You got to spend one of the four that are available, or allocate one of the four available for one of the Blue Jays' two catchers. And then you have the remaining three. And right now, because the Blue Jays are thin in the outfield, I would be shocked if Davis Schneider didn't make this team out of spring training. I know he's still got to compete for a roster spot, but the fact that he worked on his outfield defense over the winter, that he's your second option to play left field against lefties, along with IKF, it would be foolish, in my opinion, for the Blue Jays not to carry him to open the year. And then, if that's the case, that leaves you two spots remaining. And right now, one of those spots looks like it's up for grabs between Spencer Horwitz and Daniel Vogelbach, who's on a minor league deal in camp as a non-roster invitee. And Vogelbach so far has looked, you know, as good as you'd probably expect him to be in the role that he's currently in. I mean, he hit an absolute tank off Gerrit Cole last week, one that he enjoyed to the fullest extent. He pimped that home run so hard, and it was fun. I laughed pretty hard when I watched him flip his bat and casually trot around the bases, and to hear how much that irked Gerrit Cole after the game, that just made it even sweeter. And like Daniel Vogelbach is, you know, he is what he is, right? He hits hard contact, controls the strike zone, doesn't strike out a whole lot. He's somebody that can help this team, especially from a power, in the power department, where either he can be used as a DH or a pinch hitting option against right-handed pitching, largely guys who throw sinkers and sliders and changeups. He's not going to be able to handle high velocity all that well, particularly of the four-seam variety. Not going to handle curveballs well, but he's somebody that can help this team. And when you think about Spencer Horwitz too, it's easy to forget how young he still is, right? He's just 26 years old. He got a taste of the big leagues last season and looked efficient in that role. But you got to weigh the pros and cons here. And it's like, is having Spencer Horwitz on the bench regularly, playing maybe a few times a week, best for his development? Or is it better to have him play regularly in AAA, where he can continue to develop? And if Vogelbach struggles a lot and barely plays, you could easily DFA Vogelbach and call up Horwitz if you need. And Horwitz still has two minor league options, so you got a bit of time on him. So with the way Vogelbach has played, I kind of see him earning one of those two remaining bench spots. It's worth noting, though, that the Blue Jays would have to add him to the 40-man roster, and they're currently full in that regard, but that could change as easily as DFAing Ernie Clement, who's out of options. That being said, like, we just outlined three of those four bench spots. That probably leaves that last one up for grabs between Clement, Santiago Espinal, and Eduardo Escobar, who is also in camp on minor league deal with an invite to spring training. And Ernie Clement, of that trio, has looked the best. Again, it's, right, we're dealing with spring training results. Pitchers are working on things. You're facing minor league arms. But it's hard to deny that Ernie Clement already has 5 hits in 5 games. He's got a .385 average. Not only that, he's hitting balls hard, like really hard. I believe 4 of his, I wrote about this the other day, so I should remember this off the top of my head. I believe 4 of his 10 tracked batted ball events have produced an exit velocity of 101 miles per hour or higher. You know, like he's crushing balls this spring. And then you look in comparison and it's like Espinal has 2 hits over 12 at-bats. He does have a few walks, actually 5. So that is noteworthy. Escobar, however, is not doing so well. But, you know, like he does have 8 strikeouts and 15 at-bats. It's not ideal. But you also have to remember the Blue Jays aren't really putting him in spots best tuned to his strengths, because Espinal is a switch hitter. or Espinal. Escobar is a switch hitter. The Blue Jays are trying to see what he has versus righties and lefties, but historically, Escobar has fared way better against left-handed pitching than he has against righties. And if he were to make this team out of camp, if I were running the team, I would never want Escobar. I wouldn't want Escobar facing righties whatsoever. I would want him exclusively hitting from the right side of the plate against left-handed pitching. So, you know, when you look at that, you do have to dismiss the spring training results a little bit, and again, that's part of the reason why you have to take any exhibition results with a grain of salt, just because there are so many factors involved that aren't necessarily tied to what you would see during the regular season. That being said, Escobar has to turn the corner at some point this spring, or he is going to get released from his minor league deal, and you're going to see the competition for that final bench spot trimmed down to Espinal and Clement. And because Clement is out of options, and he's played better than Espinal this spring, you gotta think he's probably leading the way. And to add on to that, Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet recently wrote a piece about how other teams are already circling Clement's name as a potential waiver claim target. So I already went into this spring training thinking that if Ernie Clement gets designated for assignment, he's gone. And with the way he's played this spring, that's only reinforced my belief. And then you add in Ben Nicholson-Smith's article, and it further intensifies that belief in thinking that if the Blue Jays don't hold on to Clement, and they do like him, they do really like what they see from Clement, both offensively and defensively, but if they don't keep him and have him on their opening day roster, another team is going to acquire him, whether that's via a waiver claim or a trade to jump the line of the waiver process. And Espinal has options as well. He's got two minor league options. And frankly, if we're being honest here, if we're being frank, Espinal shouldn't be on this team anymore. I reported throughout the winter that the team was exploring trade options for Espinal. That never came to pass, largely because the free agent market turned a completely different direction than anyone would have thought, and veteran infielders signed for very team-friendly contracts. So that certainly hurt Espinal's trade value, not to mention he was below replacement level last season. That didn't help his cause, even though he has three seasons of team control. So, if things don't change, I mean, there's still 3 weeks left to go, but if things stay on this path, I wouldn't be shocked if Espinal opens the year in AAA or is traded to allow Clement to break camp with this team, because frankly, I'd prefer to have Clement than I would Espinal. I really would. The improvements that Clement made in Buffalo last season, working with hitting coach Matt Haig, who's now an assistant coach with the Blue Jays, how effective he is as a defender all over the infield. I really like Ernie Clement. I really do. And personality-wise, like, he's a fantastic guy to have in the clubhouse, too. So I'm really leaning towards keeping Clement right now. And I don't see the Blue Jays, I don't see how the Blue Jays can't keep him at this point when you know he is immediately gone if he hits the waiver wire. So that certainly puts Espinal in a tough spot here, but you know, maybe the Blue Jays can find him a new home, because you look at AAA and it's like, where's he gonna play, right? Where's Espinal gonna fit into the equation when you have a AAA roster that is gonna feature Damiano Palmigiani, Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger, Leo Jimenez? It's like, damn, Espinal might be a bench player even with the Bisons. So, you know, I think at some point you got to do right by the player too. You know, like the Blue Jays need more outfield depth and they have a surplus of infielders. So hopefully before opening day, they can either trade some of that surplus for an outfielder or sign one of the outfielders that are still available and trade Espinal to a place where he can play more regularly, or at least have an opportunity to earn a spot like that, because right now it just doesn't seem like he has that, right? Like he's down in the pecking order, right? Like if Escobar was playing better than he has so far, he'd probably leapfrog Espinal on the depth chart, and Escobar is on a minor league deal. You know, like what's that say about Espinal, right? You know, he's redundant. Like that's what it comes down to. I've said this numerous times over the last several weeks, is the IKF signing more or less made Espinal redundant, and the fact that Ernie Clements having such a strong spring has doubled down on that. So we'll see where things go here in the next few weeks, but for right now, that's where things stand with the Blue Jays roster battles and injury situations as well. But again, I don't think this roster is finished. You look at the lineup, and it could really benefit from another acquisition, another guy with pop. Not Zach Pop, but like Power Pop. You know, somebody who can give you more of a boost along with a Vogelback of that regard. So, you know, we'll see what or if Ross Atkins has cooking. If he has another move to make up his sleeve, because with the prices that infielders are going for, you got to think at this point of the offseason, like, you could probably get a Tommy Pham or a Robbie Grossman or an Adam Duvall on a pretty inexpensive one-year deal. And if that's the case, like, if you're the Blue Jays, you got to look to pull the trigger on something like that in the near future here. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next week or next time on another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.